Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, dear listeners, to another spine-tingling episode of Live, Laugh, Lore, where the laughs are haunting and the lore is chilling. Tonight, we have two very special guests, Hallie and Blair, our friends from the Macabre, A Dark History podcast. Welcome back.
Hi.
Welcome to our episode.
Thanks for having us.
We're so happy to have you.
Absolutely. A little bit of background. We had a crossover episode where these ladies hosted us a while back, and it was super fun. We learned a lot about ourselves and each other in that through the game Would You Rather, which, yeah, you do learn a lot about yourself in that game. It feels like forever ago.
It was like February. Oh my gosh, is it April? I almost said last month. But I just realized.
Yeah. It's April.
I feel like March was like the longest month of my life.
3 years have passed since.
I know.
January. So many moons.
I don't know if you guys remember, but the lights flickered.
Yes.
In my room, I asked my dad. He said it happens all the time. I was like, that makes me feel a little better.
Yes.
Because yes. I almost threw my headphones across the room. I was so afraid.
Should I show them the pig, the haunted pig? I think we figured out who the voice is. Yeah.
Let me find it.
I heard about this in your episode.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about it. It sounds horrifying.
It is horrifying. So
don't mind my sweatpants. This was my dad's when he was a kid. It terrified me as a child. And when my dad, he passed away a little while back, I decided I'm going to take this. And I don't know why I did, because I hated this guy as a child. But I think this is the voice. So
I think we named him Crispy Bacon.
We did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is our mascot.
So maybe I should keep him included in the episode, just like have him here so that way he feels... Yeah, he feels included in this one since he wanted to interrupt us so many times last time.
He should get his own camera and microphone.
Exactly.
Put it up to him and figure out what he's got to say.
Exactly. Yes. So to explain for the listeners who maybe have not heard the previous episode, my mic was picking up a disembodied male voice who was quite the jokester, sounded like, which I thought to myself, wow, that sounds like kind of my dad interrupting me and making jokes. So I think it's this. Little guy.
He's cute in a horrifying way.
Yeah.
I mean, if you stare into the eyes for too long,
it's like on the same level as Chucky. I feel like it's like,
yes, Yes, he's a terrifying little guy. My dad never understood why he scared me so much. He's like, it's a pig. He has a hat. Why are you scared? Like, have you looked into his eyes?
Right?
He's not okay. Also,
the color of him is red. Like, you know how sometimes when you cook pork, it's like red? I don't know what kind of, like, that's what it looks like. That color.
Yeah.
He looks like cooked pork.
Okay. Well, he's going to be angry about that one probably, but.
I'm sorry. I take it back. He's pink like a pig.
Well, we've spent more time introducing crispy bacon than you guys. Go back to the originally scheduled programming. So, Hallie and Blair, would you guys like to introduce yourselves and your podcast a little bit more?
Oh, who wants to go? Do you want to go? Do you want me to go?
I can go because you have the more to say. So, best of last. I'm Blair Taylor, and I am a co-host on the podcast, Macabre, a Dark History podcast. And it was very interesting how Hallie and I met and how we got our podcast started. And Hallie is the mastermind behind this crazy project that we call our podcast, and we haven't turned back.
Yeah, we're actually moving into season 3 pretty soon. And I guess to sum it up, we really talk about an umbrella of things that fall under the macabre. So it could be history, because we know there's a lot of stories that you can unearth there that history tried to bury. It sometimes gets a little weird. I mean, we talk about medical oddities, weird ways to treat things that never actually worked, histories of STDs, a little bit of supernatural, a little bit of true crime. So it's a lot, but we have a lot of fun doing it. So we just really enjoy storytelling and just shocking our audience. So that's what we do.
I have listened to the STD episode and it was quite shocking. Yes. I can attest to that. Yeah.
I was also telling my family about the living in a whale carcass thing. And they were just like, did it work? And my dad has like arthritis and he's like, did it work?
Like, I'm willing to try it.
Willing to do anything.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
That's kind of us in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, amazing. Well, we loved our time with you last time. So I'm very excited to host you guys here today on our episode. And we have a very fun premise for tonight. So you guys are going to be our jury members in the Live, Laugh, Lore witch trials.
Yes. Okay. Sometimes I call myself a Judgy McJudgerson.
This is your moment.
This is my moment.
There you go.
This is it. So tonight you are the jury, and we will be presenting you with tales that have been whispered through time, stories of hauntings, curses, and inexplicable events that defy logic. And so your task as the jury members / judges, I guess, I don't know, we'll make up the rules as we go. You are tasked with separating fact from fiction, reality from rumor, and the supernatural from the suspiciously well-written fabrication. Essentially, you're going to tell us, do you think it's real or is it a hoax?
Okay. I love it.
I love it.
Amazing. Okay. Let the trials begin. I think I have the first story for you. Okay. So for our first story, I will be telling you about the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall.
Ooh.
I'm going to move him a little bit because he's right in my
room. I have heard of this one.
Ah.
Oh my God. Dang it. Okay. We were really hoping.
I kind of had a feeling. I was like, I feel like they're going to know these things.
Yes.
But I need a refresher. So,
okay.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Good. 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 Yeah. We tried to pick some stories that were maybe lesser known, but you guys are experts after all. So, should have.
I don't know
better.
About that.
I wish we were.
Kind of.
So, the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall, a famous ghost photograph taken in 1936. Was it a genuine apparition, or could it be explained by photographic tricks or light reflections? Today, we journey to Raynham Hall, a stately home in Norfolk, England. Is it Norfolk? I always say these wrong.
Norfolk.
Norfolk.
Norfolk. Fuck. Norfolk. England. And home to one of the most famous ghosts in the United Kingdom, the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. This spectral figure has captured imaginations for nearly two centuries with her chilling story and an iconic photograph that has kept skeptics and believers debating ever since. The legend of the Brown Lady begins with her identity, Dorothy Walpole, sister to Robert Walpole, Britain's first prime minister. So she's a big deal, some would say.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy married
Robert Walpole. Oh wow. My god!
Yeah, I was waiting for the shock and awe, but it's fine. It's all good. I don't even know how to pronounce the town, so I think we're fine. Dorothy married Charles Townsend, the second Viscount Townsend, a man infamous for his fiery temper. Love that. Okay. According to the tale, their marriage took a tragic turn when Charles discovered Dorothy's alleged infidelity with Lord Wharton.
Scandal.
The drama.
Dun, dun, dun.
Love it. In a cruel act of punishment, it's said that Charles confined Dorothy to her room in Raynham Hall, forbidding her even the comfort of seeing her own children. There's also an alternative version of the story that paints a different villain, slightly, the Countess of Wharton, who lured Dorothy to her home under the guise of hospitality, only for Dorothy to be trapped there by her husband's orders. Either way, her husband was involved. Dorothy's life ended tragically at Raynham Hall in 1726, the official cause recorded as smallpox. Yet her restless spirit, clad in a brown brocade dress, is said to linger in the halls of her former prison. The first sighting of the Brown Lady dates back to Christmas of 1835. Colonel Loftus, a guest at Raynham Hall, claimed to have seen the apparition while retiring to his room. He described her wearing an outdated brown dress, rude, and what haunted him were...
Very rude.
Outdated.
All right.
That's Colonel, who?
Fuck do you know about my dress? Right. But what haunted him most were her hollow, empty eye sockets.
Ew. Gross. Yeah.
The following year, Captain Frederick Marryat, a noted novelist and friend of Charles Dickens. We know who he is, right?
Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
I do know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of him.
I've heard of his works, yes. He had his own brush with the Brown Lady. Marryat, determined to debunk the haunting as the work of smugglers, spent several nights in the hall's most haunted room. But on his last night, as he roamed the dim corridor, he saw her approaching, carrying a lamp. In a moment of terror and fury, he fired his revolver at the figure, only for the bullet to pass through the apparition, embedding itself in the door behind her.
Yeah.
Sightings continued into the 20th century, including an encounter in 1926 on the Grand Staircase by Lady Townsend's son, but none were as significant or as controversial as the events of September 19th, 1936. On that day, Captain Hubert C. Provand, a photographer for Country Life magazine, and his assistant, Indre Shira, were photographing Raynham Hall's staircase. According to their account, Shira, is that, did I say that right? Is it photographing?
No, I just
photographing?
Saw the, I just saw the pig. Like, I forgot it was there. I'm sorry.
It just gets gradually closer and closer to the Yes.
I forgot it was there. I was like,
he's my co-host today. Where did I leave up? You're fine. According to their account, Shira noticed a misty form descending the steps and urged Provand to capture it. When the negative was developed, the now famous image of the Brown Lady emerged. And I am going to share the image with you in the chat so you guys can see the evidence, if you will, for this case.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spooky. The photo, published in Country Life and later in Life magazine, created an international sensation. Paranormal investigator Harry Price interviewed the photographers and found their story convincing, describing the image as genuine. However, skeptics have proposed alternative explanations. Some argue that the image resulted from grease on the lens or an accidental double exposure. Magician John Booth replicated a similar image using a bedsheet and clever photography. Others suggest the figure resembles a statue of the Virgin Mary superimposed on the staircase, which if you look at a statue of the Virgin Mary, it does look like the same shape. I will give them that. Despite these theories, the photograph remains one of the most iconic paranormal images of all time. As the years passed, sightings of the Brown Lady have become rare, leading some to speculate that her spirit may have moved on to other nearby estates, such as Houghton Hall or Sandringham House. I don't know why those would be significant to her, but she's traveling. Good for her.
Good for her.
Yes. Yet her legacy endures, not only in the chilling tales of her appearances, but in the way she reminds us of the human stories behind these hauntings of love, betrayal, and tragedy. The end.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think? Oh. Is it real or is it a hoax?
Who wants to start?
I mean, okay, I gotta go back to fucking Colonel What's His Nuts, because the audacity. I'm sorry, but if you're gonna be scared at something and then after be like, but that dress though,
but that dress, girl, you know? Yeah, okay, come on, Colonel.
Like, whoa, that
but yeah,
no, we're on the jury.
it's an important note. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a, yeah.
Can you trust a man with that poor fashion taste? No. No.
Good thing he's not on this jury anymore. Clearly he had some things to say. I am also on the fence about this. I kind of lean towards the fact that it could be real. Just, I've looked at this thing for years on and off, and I kind of go back and forth, but, and this point I'm going to say it's real.
Yeah.
Love that. And we can always change our minds.
Yeah.
It's an open case forever. We'll never close it.
Sometimes it's fun to just give into it, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Let it take hold.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I'm gonna say this particular photo, I don't know that I believe the photo per se.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because we're talking about this time frame where spiritualism is a big thing and everybody's trying to make headlines. And this was in two big different, you know, publications, including Life. So I don't know that I necessarily believe this photo. Mm-hmm. And then the previous guy was a friend of Charles Dickens, who was an author who wrote ghost stories. So I don't know if I believe that guy necessarily either, because he would have heard the story, been curious about it. Is there any evidence of the bullet through the door?
I looked it up and I could not find anything about that. So maybe they replaced the door. Maybe it never happened. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, do I believe that this story about the lady could be true? 100%. You know, I just think some of the stuff that happened afterwards where they're trying to prove it, maybe not necessarily the most reliable. But the story itself, I do want to believe, because
yes,
multiple people have had the same sighting and describe her in a certain kind of way, which is consistent. Yeah. So that's kind of my take on it. I want to believe the base story is true and that the evidence they try to provide maybe is not so much.
Yeah.
Honestly, that was kind of my take as well, especially seeing side by side images of the Virgin Mary and how it looks very similar to that.
Pretty spot on.
It's pretty spot on. But I feel like maybe the sightings were true, but the evidence, like you said, that they've tried to give with this photograph just was a way of, you know, making the story more
like sensationalizing more it.
Sensational. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Caroline, do you have an opinion? We're part of the jury now, all of a sudden.
I do think it's real. Again, the photo, I'm like, it's like too perfect of an apparition or apparition to to be real, I think. But I mean, why wouldn't there be a ghost there? I don't have any reason to say that there wouldn't.
Exactly. And also on a grand staircase, dramatic.
Yeah.
Who am I to say she doesn't exist?
Who am I to say? Her own thing. And I bet she looks fabulous in her brown dress.
Oh, heck yeah.
My goodness. Yes. Vintage. Let's give the girl a break.
Also, what a specific description for something that's not real. You know?
Right.
Like an but she was wearing an outdated dress.
Yeah. Yeah, she was terrifying. She had no eyeballs, but also that dress.
That dress.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. The no eyeballs like, part is horrifying. Yeah.
No,
is
right?
Exactly. Exactly. I just
I feel like I would have been focused more on that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I was just getting ready to say the same thing. I don't think I would have looked anywhere but those eye holes.
Yeah.
She could have been naked. Could have
been wearing blue. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Naked. I wouldn't have known it.
Oh, my goodness. Exactly. Yes. But this man, he was a storyteller. So he made sure to get all of the details for us. Thank goodness for him.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we can chalk this up as we want to believe that this is real.
Yeah.
Maybe some of it is a hoax, but we want to believe the root of it is real.
You have been judged.
You have been judged.
Been judged.
Yes. Sometimes it's a gray area, right? That happens in court, I think. No.
Mm-hmm. I need a gavel.
Yeah. There you go. Guilty.
Perfect.
Guilty.
Guilty. That's a ghost. Okay.
All right.
Caroline, would you like to tell your story?
Yes. Oh, I'm nervous. I don't know why. I'll take a sip.
You're at court.
Okay. So I'm doing the story of the Cottingley fairies. Have you heard of these?
No, not me.
Is it the photo with the kid?
It is.
Ah, I was right. Okay, cool.
Okay. So this is the curious tale of the Cottingley fairies, which began in the summer of 1917 when 9-year-old Frances Griffith and her mother returned home to England from South Africa to stay with some extended family. It was in Cottingley, West Yorkshire, England. Polly and Arthur Wright and their 16-year-old daughter, Elsie, lived in a small wooded valley which ran through the Cottingley Beck. Where the Cottingley Beck flowed through this area, which is like a stream, essentially. So it's a beautiful, picturesque stream that flows over rocky outcrops overshadowed by trees. It quickly became the favorite spot for Elsie and Frances to explore together, but their parents got upset that they kept coming back to the house soaking wet after playing in the stream. And so when confronted, the girls replied that they went there to see the fairies. Of course, the family didn't believe them, so Elsie borrowed her father's camera and went to find proof. Now, I don't know about you, but have you guys been to the United Kingdom? Like England or Scotland? Okay.
No.
So I've been to Ireland, and I feel like it is the most magical place, mm-hmm. and you could never tell me that fairies are not real after being
there. Oh, no, fairies are real.
And if I'm traveling through Cottingley Beck or a stream or a wooded area, I'm gonna be like, yeah, there's fairies. I used to think there was fairies in my backyard in Raleigh, North Carolina.
There probably were.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, where was I? Within an hour, the girls were back with proof of the fairies. So Elsie's father, Arthur, had a special interest in photography, and Elsie had used his camera to take photos of these fairies. Her father took the plate into his own dark room to be developed, and the image that was created shows Frances with her head slightly tilted and gazing off to the right of the photographer. In front of her were several winged figures dressed in elegant clothing that seemed to be dancing. Arthur was suspicious, but later that year in September, Elsie came back with yet another plate that showed Elsie holding her hand out to a gnome-like winged figure, but Arthur was still not convinced. Elsie's mother, Polly, had a little bit of a different opinion. So she was very interested in the Theosophical movement. The oh my gosh, how do you say this? Theosophists?
Yeah.
Theosophists. Okay.
You got it.
They're individuals that are part of a spiritual movement. It was founded in the late 19th century. It's an eclectic blend of esoteric teachings, philosophy, and science, and they focus on the concept of universal brotherhood. And they study the hidden laws of nature. So one of their key beliefs was that humankind was kind of going under this process of transformation, and that would lead eventually to the perfection of the species. So she took a photo, this photo of Elsie with the fairies. to one of the lectures, which actually the subject of this lecture happened to be fairy life. And the images caught the attention of society's members, especially a man named Edward Gardner, who was one of the leading members of the society. Edward believed that these images were proof that a great metaphysical change was in the works. The photographs were examined by a photographic expert who confirmed that the images were authentic of what was in front of the camera, but not necessarily confirming that the fairies were real themselves. Gardner used the images in his lectures and later began selling prints. The images appeared in a spiritualist magazine that caught the eye of another man named Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who was writing a piece. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah. Might sound familiar. I don't know.
He was writing a piece on fairies for Strand magazine and asked the girls for permission to use the photos. Conan Doyle wrote, "The recognition of their existence will jolt the material 20th century mind out of its heavy ruts in the mud, and it will make it admit that there is a glamour and a mystery to life. Having discovered this, the world will not find it so difficult to accept the spiritual message supported by physical facts, which has already been so convincingly put before it." Following this publication, it went on to be published in Australia and in the US. The images achieved worldwide notoriety and attracted widespread skepticism. In 1921, a second set of images were published, and debate continued on for decades regarding the authenticity of the photos. So I'm going to show you the photos.
And for those listening, we will also be posting
online. So you can see. So I actually remember looking these up with my sister when we were younger, because I think we wanted fairies to be real. And we saw these photos and we were like, oh my gosh.
No, they're really cool.
So there was some speculation that they could be, you know, prints, or this could be doctored in some sort. But keep in mind, this is pretty early in the 20th century. So obviously Photoshop is not a thing. So this sparked a lot of debate, thinking that the girls had set up some hoax, but the girls maintained that these were real fairies in the back.
These were taken when?
1917.
I find it interesting that the fairy in the first picture that you sent, she's dressed in very like 19, like era specific attire with the like haircut.
Yeah, very flapper fairy.
Right. Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe she's just keeping up with the trends, but also like, could she be a doll, a little like figurine or something?
What about like a magazine cut? I mean, yeah, a magazine cut out or something.
She looks very two-dimensional, kind of. Yeah. The second one, though, does not look two-dimensional.
No.
All I can think is like, maybe it's a doll, or maybe it's a fairy.
I hope it's a fairy. Maybe. So what, do we think it's a hoax? Because I think it's a hoax.
Yeah.
Just based on the photos, I'm going to say hoax.
So this one actually does have an answer. In 1983, Elsie finally confessed to the images being a hoax. So they were actually copied from magazines. It was image from... Yep. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It was from Princess Mary's Gift Book, which was published in 1914. And essentially they had traced them, redrawn them, and they had been held upright using hat pins.
Oh, hat pins.
Two-dimensional. Yeah.
And so this one was the second set of photos. And again, for everyone listening, I'm going to post this on our social media. But this one to me looks, you know, I mean, it kind of gives it away that they're not real.
Yeah.
So the first one, if you look at that one closely, it's sitting on like a leaf or something, you know, like for more support.
Yeah. I mean, this also seems like something that I would definitely do as a young girl.
For sure.
Not even like, and then I would be so mad at my mom, be like, "Mom, Why did you share this? Now I have to keep this lie going.
Now it's global. Now it's global.
You sent this out.
Well,
like now it's embarrassing. I can't say it's fake. I was just trying to pull a prank, and now here I am.
Yep. Stuck in this.
Yeah.
Who took the photo then? The girls took the photos of each other?
Yep. So this, I believe it was Elsie who took the photo. She apparently was pretty good at doctoring photos up. She had a little bit of a talent for it, just like her father did. So. Okay.
Makes sense that they were curious about that too, since that was a hobby of their father's, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't know what she confessed.
When was that?
Yeah.
When
did she 1993. Confess? So she was.
Wow.
Damn, she had a long time.
She was like, well, I'm about to go. I might as well tell.
Deathbed confession. Oh my God.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
That is wild.
I wonder how much money they made off of that.
Yeah, because they were selling the prints, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably so much money.
I wonder if anybody like sued once she confessed.
Well, Edward Gardner, he literally till the day he died, he believed that they were real. He would not let it go.
Oh, good for him.
I feel bad.
Yeah, I love a man who believes in fairies.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. Just want to believe. Sometimes you just want to believe, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. There are worse things in this world to believe in. Let's
exactly what I was
let's believe in fairies. Yeah, hold on to that, Edward. I'll support you. Okay, so that has been proven here and elsewhere to be a hoax, sounds like. Perfect.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I think I remember seeing these as a kid, and me and my sister were like, oh my gosh, fairies are real.
Yeah, and I will back up what Caroline said too. I've been to Ireland, and it's literally the most beautiful. Like, even just standing in a parking lot, I'm like, magical things have happened
it's
here.
So beautiful.
I just know it. This is so beautiful.
I fell asleep on the bus on the way to Galway, and I woke up, and I was like, oh my God, this is like so beautiful. I had never seen anything like it. I was like, what?
So I do have a question. This may be a little bit off topic, but maybe not. Are you familiar with the topic of ley lines?
Oh my goodness. I remember listening to a podcast episode about it a long time ago.
Basically, there are these invisible lines called ley lines that cross all over the globe at certain points. And I'm just curious, if you looked at a map of the ley lines, if in Ireland you would see that pass through or cross over, because there are certain places. I feel like Mount Shasta is one of the places where I had an experience, and it was like overwhelmingly emotional, and it's a spiritual mecca for that reason. So I'd just be curious to see if Ireland has those.
Bet they do.
They do.
It looks like there are.
But I don't know if it was where I was.
I mean, I think part of it was just us being Americans finally going somewhere that has like history and
heck yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I would love to go. It feels magical. But it looks like there's quite a few.
It's more in like Northern Ireland, it looks like.
That's really cool.
Yeah, be interesting.
That's a good idea.
Explore that a little bit more.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Well, whole new rabbit hole for us to dive into.
I know. There's something going on there for sure, because it is absolutely truly magical.
Yes. Okay. Are we ready for our third case?
Let's do it.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Bring in a third. One...
Bring in a third. I gotta do my mug again.
There you go. That like
yes.
Yeah.
That reverberated. Perfect. Oh,
sorry.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so this one is The Miracle of the Sun. Have you guys heard of this one?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay, yay. No. Okay, perfect. So this one it's gained notoriety not so much because of the amount of proof, but because of the number of people that it affected and who believe in this. So in 1917, thousands of people in Fatima, Portugal, claimed to witness the sun dancing in the sky. Was it a divine miracle, or could it be explained by optical illusions or mass hallucination? We'll find out.
Hmm.
All right. It's October 13th, 1917. A crowd of 70,000 people gather in a muddy field in Fatima, Portugal. They've come in response to a prophecy made by three shepherd children, Lucia Santos and her cousins Francisco and Jacinta Marto. The children claimed that the Virgin Mary, whom they called the Lady of the Rosary, promised to perform a miracle on this date so that all may believe. So again, we're listening to children, so keep that in mind in this story as well. What followed that day has become one of the most debated religious phenomena in history. Witnesses reported a series of extraordinary solar phenomena. After a period of rain, the sun emerged as a spinning disk in the sky. It cast multicolored lights, zigzagged towards the earth, and then returned to its original position. Many claimed that their wet clothes and the muddy ground around them dried instantaneously after this happened. However, not everyone saw the same thing. Some witnesses only observed radiant colors, while others, including skeptics, saw nothing unusual at all. Newspapers of the time, including secular and skeptical outlets, documented these claims, adding to the intrigue. Despite the varying accounts, one thing was certain: something extraordinary happened that left an indelible mark on those present. I actually have a picture of a clipping of this event, and you can kind of get an idea of just how many people were gathered around based on this prophecy that these children had.
Wow.
Told everyone of.
Wow.
Yes. Quite a few.
Yeah.
Some would say.
Oh my gosh.
So many.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, I loved the outfits too.
I know,
it was just really cool to see like what they were wearing in 1917. Very cool.
Right. That outdated brown dress. You know.
Such an outdated brown dress. Thank God the Colonel isn't here.
Yeah.
Thank God. He'd be ripping them to shreds.
He would.
All right. So shortly after the event, the Catholic Church began investigating. Bishop Jose de Selva declared the phenomenon worthy of belief in 1930, paving the way for official devotion to Our Lady of Fatima. Even Pope Pius XII claimed to witness a similar solar event in 1950 while walking in the Vatican Gardens. When I read that the first time, I was like, so he just wanted to copy and just say like, well, I saw it too, but you guys weren't there. Okay. So
it's just me.
It was just for me.
Mm-hmm.
Father John DeMarchi, an Italian priest, spent years interviewing witnesses. He concluded that the event could not be explained by mass hallucination or hysteria, citing that the sheer number and diversity of accounts, including reports from skeptics and non-believers. Of course, not everyone agrees on the miraculous nature of the event. Critics argue that prolonged staring at the sun could have caused optical illusions. Atmospheric conditions, including dust clouds, might have explained the visual phenomena as well. Scientists like Augusta Meeson suggest that retinal effects caused by sun gazing could create the illusion of movement and color changes. And others propose psychological factors such as the power of suggestion influenced by the crowd's perceptions, which I think that one is a very good argument. If I traveled all this way based on a prophecy and nothing happened, but some people are saying it happened, I really would want to believe that I did not just waste my time.
Right.
And so I might lean into it a little bit.
It's kind of like when you, And you like went to Jesus camp
yeah.
growing up. You know what I mean? Is and this a universal like crying,
experience?
Because everyone's crying because they're like, Jesus touched me. And so you're like, oh, okay. And then you start crying because you think, but then you're thinking in your head, what's wrong with me? Nothing's going on.
Oh my
Is
God.
Is that too niche?
No.
No. I had an experience pretty, like that as well.
Pretty universal, I think, actually, yeah. Which is the like, sad part.
Oh my God, everyone.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah, that brought back so much.
Stuff I tried to bury.
Yeah.
I will never forget that. I was like, something's wrong with me. I don't feel anything.
Yes. I remember there was a like prayer group at one of these Jesus camps, and there was one girl who... She was like, I don't want to say my prayer out loud. It's too personal, but Jesus knows my prayer. And so then, of course, I had to be like, because I couldn't think of anything to pray about. So I was like, Jesus knows my prayer as well. And I was going to carry that to my grave. But I had nothing. He didn't know what my prayer was. I didn't know what my prayer was. None of us knew. But nope. I couldn't. I had to perform.
You had to perform.
Embarrassing.
When you put on the spot like that, it's like
exactly ooh. Like, well, yeah. Things are pretty good right now. I don't have anything to bring out, but
God, I hope I get a boyfriend soon. That was probably my prayer at 14 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Will someone kiss Definitely me? Mine. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my God! Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Okay. So, but what about the claim that the event was seen miles away from Fatima? Could it have been a localized atmospheric anomaly, or is this evidence of something more? It was supposedly seen in the region as a whole in that area. For believers, the miracle of the sun is a testament to divine intervention, fulfilling Mary's promise to the shepherd children. The event's timing, coinciding with historical milestones like the end of World War I and the rise of communism, adds to its spiritual significance. Spirituality was on the rise at this time. Theologians. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
You.
Was this the same word, Caroline, that you got stuck with too?
No. Oh, it was close. Theosophics
or something yeah. like that.
Yeah. It's probably the same exact thing though.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That and photography and photographing.
I know. Going between those is actually hard.
Yeah. My goodness. Why do we have to make English so hard? Right. Anyways, theologians like Father Andrew Pinsent argue that miracles often use natural phenomena to convey divine messages. In this view, the event at Fatima was not just a miracle of faith, but also a call to reflection and repentance. So what do we make of the miracle of sun? Was it divine intervention, a remarkable natural occurrence, or a trick of the mind? What do you say?
This is Jerry. Blair. What?
Your turn. You want me to go first? You go. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot.
I think it's two things. I think it's natural phenomena, mm-hmm. and I think it's trick of the mind. Like we talked mm-hmm. about, power of suggestion is yeah. very heavy in everything that we do. And especially after it rains or you have a weird situation with weather where you're seeing illusions, like when it's too hot in the summertime and you're driving down the road, it looks like the road is water
yeah.
and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I think that in this case, this is probably what was going on. And then, like you said, when people were staring at the sun for too long and they're like, well, I mean, I'm not even staring at my ring light right now, but if I close my eyes or look around, I'm seeing, you know, yeah. purple, oh, yeah. you know. Light mm-hmm. rings.
Oh flares. Yeah, like when you close your eyes yeah. and you see the
yeah
yeah
yeah mm,
that's
yeah.
a good point.
So I think it was those things, and then like what? You said too, traveling, and you're like, oh, I didn't see anything, and then well, I did see something.
Well, maybe I saw something actually.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary yeah. next to me saw it, so I saw it, you know.
And now I feel like a loner.
Jesus knows my prayer. I yeah. saw it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holly, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, this was supposed to be a religious event that was happening, correct? Like
it was,
people
yes.
came to this area for this religious yeah. event. We do have to consider the time frame and World War I. And mm-hmm. then all the people that were supporting it are also religious figures. So I feel like there was maybe a different agenda, kind of pushing this idea.
Yes.
A little mass hysteria and looking at the sun for a little too long. I'm going to be the skeptic, the negative naysayer in the group.
I would agree with both of you. I also will, I must present, I do have a bias. I'm not a religious person, so I am not as quick to lean towards that side. But I would like to know more about the three shepherd children that had this prophecy. Like, where did that come from?
Who, and how long have they been talking about it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. How did they get 70,000 people involved?
Right. Like, do you think that they maybe stared at the sun for too long? And then they were like, let's, like, how old were they? Were they four? Or were they like 12? And they're like, let's play a prank on everyone.
That I don't know.
Right.
But they said that they knew the date of when something would happen, that the Virgin Mary was going to do some sort of miracle on this date. They didn't know what it was, but they knew who and when. So.
Good point.
Supposedly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I feel like them. To this time frame, people would have been looking for any kind of a distraction and hope.
Yeah.
True.
And a lot of people who are religious, they cling to that because they are looking for miracles and hope and good things. And I mean, just have to think about what was going on at that time and how terrible it would have been. You know, so something that like this would have been all over newspapers and
true.
Yeah. That was one of the points that was called out actually for the fairies. It was that during this time people were, you know, going through a lot. There was a war and there was a lot of stress and people were looking kind of for more fantasy, like to romanticize life a little bit. And so believing in fairies kind of takes your mind off of, well, we could die any day because of mom, you know, something could happen. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And also I think that this is one of those instances where it hurts no one if it was true. Like, it seemed to help a lot of people in this moment. Mm-hmm. So, hurts no one at all to believe that it's true or not, especially, in this time frame. That makes a lot of sense. So, I like to believe in fairies because I don't want to deal with, you know, real life. So I get it.
Escapism, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yeah. I know that that's what's happening, but, you know.
Right. I believe in a
that's
lot of things.
That's why we have these podcasts.
Exactly.
Yep. That's why we're here today.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Escapism has saved us all.
Exactly. So I think case closed on that. Probably a little bit of a mass hysteria moment. But also kind of a beautiful story at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 All right. I think we have one more.
All right, we have one more. So this is the dancing plague.
Oh.
Which one? Which
one? 15, 18.
Yeah.
More than one.
Okay. This one. Okay, so you guys know. Okay. All right.
I'm excited.
Great. Everyone knows. I'm
excited.
So hundreds of people in Strasbourg dance uncontrollably for weeks. Was it a case of mass possession, or could it have been a form of mass hysteria or a reaction to contaminated food? In July 1518, residents of the city of Strasbourg in Germany were struck by a sudden and seemingly uncontrollable urge to dance. The hysteria started when a woman known as Frau Trophia, I think I'm saying that right, ran into the street and began silently twisting, twirling, and shaking. Yeah, I too have done that, but it's when I've had a little too much to drink.
Relatable.
It's like when I had too much to drink and Lady Gaga comes on. I'm like, oh.
Exactly. Listen, somebody has to start the dance on the dance floor and let it be her. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
She seemed unable to stop and kept dancing until she collapsed from exhaustion. After resting, she began the frenzied activity once again. She kept up this solo dance-a-thon for nearly a week, and during that time, 36 others joined in. They all kept going past the point of injury. There was no explanation at the time for the phenomenon, and local physicians blamed it on hot blood. Maybe that's where that term came from.
There's a cure for that.
Hot-blooded.
You read my mind. There you go.
They suggested that they simply had to dance and shake the fever away.
Okay.
Oh. The civic and religious leaders theorized that more dancing was the solution, and they arranged for guild halls for the dancers to gather with musicians to accompany the dancing. By August, the epidemic had claimed as many as 400 victims. A number of them actually died from exhaustion. And then finally, in early September, the mania stopped. This event was thoroughly documented, and it was the last of actually several outbreaks across Europe. Other events had taken place between the 10th and 16th centuries. A better known outbreak occurred in 1374 across the Rhine River. The explanation at the time was that Saint Vitus, a Catholic saint who pious 16th century Europeans believed had the power to curse people with the dancing plague, specifically people that did not follow him devoutly. When combined with the horrors of disease and famine, both of which were tearing through Strasbourg in 1518, the Saint Vitus superstition may have triggered a little bit of stress-induced hysteria and caused some of the dancing. Or he was truly cursing people. Other theories go on that the dancers were actually part of a religious cult, or they ingested a specific mold called ergot, which I'm sure we all are very familiar with ergot. We all know it. What the hell went on with that? This is a type of mold that grows on damp rye, and it produces spasms and hallucinations.
So, for anyone listening that does not know what ergot is, that is the main theory behind the Salem witch trials and all of the craziness that happened there, that it was not witchcraft, it was mold.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So what do you think? Ergot?
Ergot.
Ergot.
Yeah, I think it's definitely that. And then maybe that also was also a little bit of power of suggestion after a while. Yeah. It's like, well, if they're going to do this, you know, I can act weird for once and nobody will, you know, recognize me for it. So
they were bored, you know, back then.
Yeah.
They were. Yeah. Have you guys seen the videos of, God, I'm getting real, you know, whatever. The videos of the women who claimed that after they took the COVID vaccine, they shook uncontrollably.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
It was proven false. But yeah, one of them like said false. That they were like forced to walk backwards now, like they could only walk backwards or something.
Yeah. And like more people kind of came,
mm-hmm.
jumped on board, and
it was all over
shaking.
Facebook, if you could believe
what was it. What was really interesting was that they were shaking, but their camera was absolutely still.
Their mm-hmm. legs are... Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
I feel like the fact that the dancing plagues have happened multiple times throughout history kind mm-hmm. of makes it a little bit more credible, because, you know, I mean, that's a big deal.
It is wild.
I think that just the time frame, food quality, and mm-hmm. all those kinds of things would come mm-hmm. into play. So yeah, I want to say this would be the one that I believe the most so far out of all the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
agreed.
I feel like too, like maybe that first woman who started the dance craze, maybe she ingested the ergot, but I feel like not all of the people probably had ingested that. Like the mass hysteria, like you were talking about, I think.
Maybe she just had anxiety. Like sometimes before I'm about to have a panic attack, I have to get up and do jumping jacks because I feel like I'm going to jump out of my skin mm-hmm. if I don't move.
That's a good way to like deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should try that next time.
The anxiety just never went away for her.
I don't, maybe it was really bad anxiety. I mean, she thought a priest was cursing her. I mean, maybe.
Fair.
Right?
That's a lot of stress.
That is a lot of stress, yes.
And they had disease and famine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She's probably well, if I'm going to go out, might as well.
Exactly. I'm going to get my name in the papers.
I'm going to get that old razzle-dazzle in before I can.
The old razzle-dazzle.
shake that moneymaker.
Jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
Pot of a
Oh my goodness. What is that form of dancing called that Liza Minnelli used to do all the time, and it was like the very like like
all I can think of was cabaret, but
I think it's like named after the choreographer or something.
Yeah,
and
I'll look it up.
What's her name? She's on SNL and she does a skit about it where she's like trying to turn off a lamp, but she has to dance and like it takes forever because she never makes it to the lamp. She's like, oh, let me go over here. And Kristen Wiig, that's who Kristen it was.
Wig, I love her.
Me too.
Oh my God.
The chitter pop? I love her. I don't know.
No, it was a style of choreography. I'm going to remember it the minute that we hang up here.
And that would honestly be such a good I was thinking that'd be a good SNL skit to like redo the dancing plague, but have like Liza Minnelli come in or someone dressed as Liza Minnelli.
That'd be awesome.
That would be such a guys. I literally wish I was on SNL because I write down these things. I'm like, that'd be a good SNL skit.
Right. <That'd be> It's Bob Fosse. So the Fosse. Yeah. Okay, yes. Yeah.
Love it.
Her that use of awesome. Jazz hands. Signature movement. Oh my goodness. I mean, you could really test out a lot of different dance styles without any judgment in that moment. Right? So I guess that's right. Great.
The original flash mob.
Oh my literally. God. Yeah. Yeah.
Can add that to our weirdest ways to die.
List. It is a weird way to die.
Very weird. Dancing. I didn't know that it happened more than once, too. Like, when was the most recent time that it happened?
That was the last one, I think.
That was the last one?
They said that one was the last one.
That was when they said, you know what? Enough with the ergot. We're done with that. It's causing problems.
Mm-hmm. There's at least 5 documented cases.
Oh, crazy. My God.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Mm.
The curse.
I'm sure it'd be fun
dance.
At first.
I mean, yeah.
And then I'd be exhausted. I'm like,
yeah. I feel like pretending. How do you not pass out after a certain point? Because if you've ever been to a dance club and you dance for like 2 hours straight, that's like exhausting. I don't know how.
Oh my God.
Like, keep going.
I kept thinking about Gilmore Girls when they do the 24-hour dance competition. Yeah. I don't know if you guys watch Gilmore Girls. That's what I was thinking about.
No.
Were they on some other drugs though? Because you think about like uppers would keep you going, but you'd still have to eat. And like they didn't even take potty breaks, right? They didn't stop to pee or do anything.
Ooh.
I don't want to think about
the state of that dance floor. Oh my goodness.
Oh my god.
Stomping in something.
Yeah.
Oh. Right.
So don't drop it low hydrated. Because you'll find things you don't want to see. Oh.
Yeah, like No Hands by Waka Flocka Flame came on. They were like, I can't stop.
Oh my God.
And imagine being the people they ask to come and play music for it.
Exactly. They're just, they're like, are they ever going to fucking stop?
Like, can you imagine? They're like literally suffering. They can't stop dancing. And then they're like, bring in the music. And it's like.
Maybe music is not the best idea. Yeah. Please.
The poor band is just like.
Did the band eventually join in? Like,
right.
I don't know. Were they talking to each other while this was happening? I would love to know more, but I guess. No. Well, those were our stories for today. You guys were a wonderful jury. I think this will go down in history. We've answered all of the questions that remained for these stories. And yeah, I think we can all agree unanimously that fairies are real.
Great.
And I think that should be our last, you know, message coming out of this.
Birds aren't real, but fairies are.
Yes. Birds are government drones. Fairies are real. You heard it here first. Yes.
They just can't be photographed. That's the trick. Like,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yes. They wanted us to believe in birds so much that they created bird watching, you know, as a hobby. They were like, this will get them. They'll believe it now. Let's make
that
it
was
sport.
My COVID hobby, actually.
Let's make it an activity. I actually love bird watching. I really do. I love birds, but
I was like, they? I'm going to learn all the backyard birds. And I sat there like,
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, that was all that we had today. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh. It was so much fun, as always. Yes.
Thank you for having us. This was so fun. Yes.
Love it. Yes. Hopefully you guys did hear at least one new thing that you had not heard before.
Yes.
Hopefully. Mm-hmm. Yes. Perfect.
Llegaron los nuevos McCrispy Strips, listos para aventurarse en la mezcla de mayo ketchup, la barbecue que quedó en el fondo de la cajita, Hot Fudge Sundae y en la nueva Creamy Chili McCrispy Strip Dip. Los nuevos McCrispy Strips, ahora en McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.